What does it take to help people with a history of gun violence get a fresh start?
They haven't gotten all the way in the wrong direction, but they're headed in the wrong direction. Those are the people that you have to talk to. You have to put your arms around them, and you have to say, come on, we do not want you in the criminal justice system. We want to see if you can succeed in our community.
We continue our series on how Illinois communities are trying to stop gun violence by looking at two programs in Peoria and Champaign-Urbana that are bringing together city officials, law enforcement, and the community. Plus, state lawmakers have 5 days to pass a budget before the state goes into its third year without a spending plan. We'll get the latest on the special sessions being held in Springfield with two Illinois political reporters. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. The latest news is next. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. In discussions about gun violence in Illinois, a lot of attention tends to go towards Chicago, which has seen a surge in shootings and fatalities over the past 2 years. Just this past weekend, 4 people were killed and 42 were wounded in weekend violence, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. But unfortunately, the issue of people being shot and killed because of gun violence happens throughout Illinois. And that's why this summer, the 21st is taking time to check in with different communities throughout the state to learn how they've not just been affected by gun violence, but what city officials and community leaders are doing to address the problem. Today, we're going to Peoria, where so far this year, more than 30 people have been shot and 5 people have died from their injuries. That's according to reports earlier this month from the Peoria Journal-Star. In a few minutes, the Peoria mayor is going to be joining us. Jim Artis is going to be talking about the city's efforts to bring together law enforcement in the community to address this problem. But first, on the line with us from Peoria is Tirico Spencer. He had been involved in gun violence in the past and was on probation when he found help through an anti-gun violence program called Don't Shoot Peoria. That's what we're going to be talking about right now. Tirico, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Good morning, Tirico. I wonder, first of all, what made you decide to participate in this Don't Shoot Peoria program?
Well, it was part of my mandatory parole, and I really started participating just because to find a change, to do something different with myself. I wanted better for myself and better for my family.
How old are you, Tirico?
22 years old.
And when you said you wanted a change, what were you doing before?
I was just out in the streets trying to make ends meet and everything and doing some stuff that I really shouldn't have been doing. So when I got into the Don't Shoot program and got released and everything from jail, I started just branching out on my own, doing side jobs, working on houses and lawn services and everything.
And I imagine, was it hard? Because I imagine when you got released from jail, I bet, was it even hard to find a job?
It was very hard to find a job. With the felony conviction, it was hard. A lot of jobs turned me down. Sometimes I would get discouraged and feel like I would never find a job. And I just ended up getting through the Don't Shoot program and linking up with different people, like Jobs Partnership with Cheryl, and she helped me out a lot and found me different jobs. I also went through another temporary agency called Helping Hands, and I was working temporary for the Civic Center for a while, and the person that I had met with there had connected me with a job at Popeyes. And from there, I'm currently employed at Bodine Services in Peoria.
So it sounds like not only were they able to offer you practical help, right, because now you have a job, what other kind of things, like you said, this woman, Cheryl, what other kind of things do you think they were able to help with?
Job training, being able to cope with difficulties that may come around in life, how to handle stress in a way, and just how to avoid conflict in different situations.
Yeah, when you say that, how to avoid conflict in different situations, what have you learned from the Don't Shoot program that you think is maybe something new for you?
I learned to basically, if you feel you're getting into a situation that you don't want to be in or can't avoid it, just avoid it. A lot of stuff nowadays can be just avoided, just turn the other cheek to it. I mean, don't get me wrong, there comes situations where you sometimes you just act out of instinct and just act out and don't process the full situation through, like, the outcome and the consequences that could follow behind it. So in a way, that's what that taught me, to just process everything and analyze the situation and think about it before I go with the action.
And was it, do you think that that, I mean, that sounds like that's been very helpful for you. I also wonder practically for you, you said, you know, for you and your family, you're in the Peoria area. Has it been, do you feel like it's hard to be, I don't know where you live right now. Do you feel like, do you actually need to move to a different neighborhood, or do you feel like you can stay in the neighborhood where you're in and still make the changes that you have made in your life?
Don't get me wrong. I love my city. I love my neighborhood. I grew up on the south end of Peoria. So that will always reside within me. I mean, it's violence everywhere. I just feel that, in a way, it's getting worse, but at the same time, it's getting better in a way. I mean, you can't stop all the violence, but you can prevent some.
And what do you think, how much do you think programs like this, Don't Shoot Peoria, how much has it made a difference in your life, first of all?
Oh, it has made a dramatic difference. The stuff that I used to do before I was incarcerated and things that led me up to my incarceration, I don't even do anymore. Like, I mean, you can't force a change on anyone. It's up to that person inside of them if they want to change or not. Everyone has that decision, and I just made the decision to change and want better and just have a different lifestyle and not having to look over my shoulder about everything. I'd rather live comfortable than looking over my shoulder, wonder if someone's coming for me or if the police is looking for me.
Yeah, Tariqo, you said you feel like the gun violence, in a way, I don't know if you think it's getting worse or not. I wonder why you think the situation is the way it is, particularly as you're talking about on the south side of Peoria.
I would say it's the access to the guns and just the way the guns land in the wrong hands sometimes. You got kids out here that listen to the music and just think that's the right way to go, and they get influenced by it, because a lot of children might not have a father figure in their life, never had one to show them the right thing to go about handling, right way to go about handling things. So I mean, the only thing that you can do is just hope and just pray that everything gets better.
Yeah. When you say that, I wonder what you want people to know about people who've been in your situation, and now that you've also, especially you, now that you've graduated from this program, from the Don't Shoot Peoria program.
All I can honestly say, if you want to change, change, because there's always room for change. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. You gotta actually want the change for yourself, and you gotta want it to happen. It's not just going to happen magically.
Yeah, and for you, it sounds like this is a process that's taken years. Am I right?
It's taking some time.
Taking some time, yeah.
But it's taking some time, but it gets better each and every day.
That's Tariqo Spencer. Hey, Tariqo, if you can hang around with me for a minute, I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation, the mayor of Peoria, Jim Artis. Mayor Artis, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Nella. Nice to be back.
Yeah, as you're listening to Tariqo share his story, I imagine this was your hope for all of the participants who've gone through the Don't Shoot Peoria program. There have been 235 people who go through what's called a call-in. Can you explain what that process is?
Yeah, Nyla, the call-in is basically the community taking an opportunity to have a group of these folks that have either they're known to our police department through their actions or actions that they're associated with other associates or, you know, potential gang members. They come in and we have a conversation, and it's an opportunity for several different segments of our community, law enforcement, our state's attorney and U.S. attorneys. We usually have someone from representing the social services that we're offering to the individuals to try to help them, you know, pull out of this rut. We usually have a speaker that represents, it's David Kennedy calls it the voice of pain, and it's not always a victim of violent crime. Sometimes it's a member of the family who is, in the case of a gun crime, the shooter, because you know a lot of people don't really realize it, but when a shooting situation happens that results in a homicide, you have the person who was killed as a victim, but many times the person that committed the crime is, you know, going to be gone for the majority of their life too. So there's an impact on the family, and then we have a space in that conversation for members of the faith-based community and the community at large that really just try to give a message to these folks that, you know, we're serious about our initiative to reduce gun violence in our community. And we're not just saying put your guns down and then good luck. We're saying put your guns down and we want to help you, whether it's, you know, get a GED, get some counseling, get other job skills training, and so on, which we know that they all need. And I can tell you that Tarika is that story we've heard so many times of, you know, these, and it's been mostly men, you know, young men and some boys, to be honest with you, that they're caught in that trap, and they can't see their way out. And I really admire the fact that Tarika took the initiative and more or less walked away. And the community is very resolved to helping these folks change those bad patterns.
Yeah, Tarika, can you tell us about the call-in? How did that happen for you? Do you remember
My parole officer had came by and told me that I had a mandatory call-in. And at first I was skeptical about going because I didn't know what I was going to walk into. I didn't know if I was being, you know, set into a trap to possibly be reincarcerated for something that could have got linked to me that I didn't know about or anything like that. So I just ended up walking in one day, sat down with everybody, let the speakers say what they had to say, and what they wanted to do, how they wanted to help us and everything. And it was different organizations there that were willing to help you. You just had to take the action on your own and proceed to get the help. So that's what I did. I told myself I want something different. I want a job. I want to be able to live comfortable and stable. So I took the initiative and went out and looked for the help, got the help, and now I'm where I'm at now, and I'm actually happy with myself. I see a big change in myself. I walk away from a lot of things that I used to do. I don't do. It doesn't bother me anymore. So I'm living the way I always wanted to live.
Yeah, Dante. I'm sorry, Tarika. It sounds like there was an element of trust there where you had to walk in the room, but I guess you didn't really have a choice, right? I mean, you had to go because your probation officer said you had to go.
Right.
So I wonder if that, and then when the program was presented to you, I mean, was it also something where it was kind of like, well, this is the best option that I have right now? Was that also what you thought when the program was presented to you?
I wouldn't say it was the best option, but it's the option that I was looking for.
Ah, okay. Huh, that's interesting. So when you say it wasn't maybe the best option, what for you, what would have been the best option?
I'm the type of person where I would like to get things done on my own. I never really like to seek out for help when it comes to things like me finding a job or anything like that, because I like to do it on my own. So, but when you feel like you need help, and trust me, you'll know when you need help, because you'll say to yourself, I need some help to get something done, because everything can't be done. You know, every now and then somebody needs somebody to lift them up and push them forward. So I took that option and just said, you know, I'm going to get some help. I'm going to see what these programs can do for me and see if I like them. And I got into one program, which was actually Cheryl and Jobs Partnership. And there was another one. I can't remember the name of it right now. I think it was Job Readiness or something like that. And I got into those programs. They started talking to you about different jobs, how to handle conflict on the job and outside of the job, and training you to get you those soft skills for the job and everything. And like I said, I liked it, and it was something new to me.
Yeah.
And I just kept going with the flow. And Mr. Angel Cruz, he was helping me out along the way too, trying to keep me busy, trying to keep me in different programs that would help me out and better myself. So I just took advantage of it. And ever since I linked up with Mr. Cruz, he's just been such a blessing to me. He's helped me out a lot, honestly.
Trinket, did you have, when you came out of jail, did you have your GED? Did you have a diploma?
I had a high school diploma already.
You did?
I just got my high school diploma.
Okay, yeah. And I said,
he helped me actually get my driver's license and everything. So he's helped me out a lot.
Yeah, because these
programs, the Don't Shoot program, is there to help you, honestly. I can honestly say they're there to help you.
Yeah, and what's your goal? What do you want for the future?
My main goal, I want to one day open up a business. I want to be my own businessman, my own boss. I want to be able to run my own business.
Yeah, Tirico, thanks for joining us. Mayor Artis, can you stick around after the break, right? But I want to thank Tirico Spencer for joining us. He's a participant in the Don't Shoot program. Mayor Artis, how many people have gone through the program since you all have started?
I know it's over 200. I want to say 230 or 40.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Tirico Spencer, thanks for taking the time to join us. I know you're really busy with all of your work and everything. I appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Mayor Jim Artis. We're also going to be joined by the former U.S. attorney who helped start this program, Jim Lewis. He's going to be along the line with us as well. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st as we continue our series on gun violence throughout Illinois and what different cities and community leaders are doing to try to stop it.
The 21st is made possible by the library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, fostering discovery by providing information curation and archival services to extend scholarly impact from Urbana-Champaign to the state, the nation, and the world. The University Library at Illinois.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about gun violence and what cities throughout Illinois are doing to try to break the cycle. As we've just listening to Tirico Spencer tell us about the Don't Shoot Peoria program. Peoria was the first city in central Illinois to adopt this anti-violence strategy. It's based on a national model. In Peoria, it's called Don't Shoot Peoria. A few years later, Champaign-Urbana launched a similar program called See You Fresh Start. The gentleman behind both of those is going to be joining us in a few minutes, a former U.S. attorney for the Central District of Illinois, Jim Lewis. On the line with us now, the mayor of Peoria, Jim Artis. Mayor Artis, what motivated you to want to start this program, which you all started, I believe, back in 2011, correct?
Well, in 2011 was when we first started really honing in on the increasing gun violence in our community. We had the opportunity to speak with Tate Chambers, who is our local U.S. attorney, through Mr. Lewis's leadership overall in this district. And we came upon the book that David Kennedy wrote called Don't Shoot, and really took us probably a good year to have a comprehensive understanding of the gun situation in our across the country, why these patterns were evolving, and what kind of success that he had with his it's called a focused deterrence model, which actually puts the focus on deterring the crime instead of trying to to work on these things after the gun violence happens.
I want to bring someone else into this conversation as well. I mentioned Jim Lewis. He retired last year as the former U.S. attorney for the 46th County Central District of Illinois. He was also very crucial to setting up this program. Jim Lewis, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you very much for taking up this subject, and I applaud Tirico, and I absolutely applaud Mayor Artis, who's been shown tremendous leadership actually across the state on this issue. This is really important work, and he's just done a wonderful job with it.
Jim Lewis, I wonder if you can explain a little bit more, as Mayor Artis is telling us about this this deterrence program. This is a sort of an evidence-based model. It involves reaching out to people, offenders, as we heard Tirico say, people who have, he had a felony conviction, offering them a different path forward. How you go about identifying who to pick to offer this program to?
Well, there's a couple of ways to do it, but the primary one is that your police in your community know who are the people that are likely to pick up the guns. They know the people who have already picked up the guns. They know the people that are behind it and causing it. Your police already know. The question is, what do you do with the people who haven't quite picked up the gun, but who are with those people and who are likely to pick up the gun in the future? And so instead of just being law enforcement cleaning up after the damage is done, you decide to do what Mayor Artis and others have done. Talk to the people directly in a very effective way. You learned about the call-ins. The people who are likely to pick up the gun in the future, and see they're on a course. They're headed in a direction. See if you can change the course. See if you can change the direction. See if you can deter some of these things from happening. See if you can prevent it. And let's take Tirico. Now, if Tirico goes ahead with his life and does no harm, he's helped himself. He's helped his family. And there are potential victims out there who aren't victims. So it helps the entire community. It's, in the words of Jerry Brady, the state's attorney up there, it's simple logic. It's simple human logic to have something like this.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jim. It's simple logic, but Mayor Artis, it also sounds like you've brought a lot of people together. As we heard Tirico talking about all of the different people who had been involved in helping him, whether it was just as simple as getting a driver's license, which is something that can be very difficult for people coming out of prison, identification is an issue, him helping find a job, all of the job readiness and the soft skill training. He talked about the mentors it sounds like he has made, who are very important in his life. Mayor Artis, how many different people do you have involved and organizations do you have involved in your program? Because it's obviously not just a law enforcement effort.
No, actually, it's supposed to be anything but a law enforcement effort. The law enforcement community participates in the call-ins and reinforces that they're just doing their job, and it's how our society works. But the law enforcement is a very small component of this. To answer your question, the community that participates on the social side of this is growing literally every day. I'd hate to hazard a guess, but it's in the hundreds that are involved in some way, shape, or form, and also a number of businesses. As you said, Nyla, the business community are really working hard to try to work with these folks, so give them a second opportunity. The unemployment rate in Illinois is as low as it's been in 10 years, and for a lot of employers, especially for some entry-level jobs that may not have a high skill set, they feel like it's basically, there's zero unemployment because they have a really hard time filling these positions. So a lot of our community businesses that are concerned about what's happening are stepping to the plate and helping provide us with opportunities for some of these young men to get a job and to derive an income out of that. And so the biggest part of this whole effort is the community voice, the community as a whole, that's saying, we can't have these continue to have these gun crimes in our community. We want these people to put the guns down. We want to provide them opportunities for an escape to get out of that vicious cycle that they're in, and people are stepping up to the plate to make this happen.
And so how much does this cost the city? Is this costing the city anything, Mayor Artis?
No, really, the cost is, there's not an extra cost. I mean, this is, for lack of a better term, this is kind of a new philosophy that our police department has taken. As I said before, it's that focused deterrence model where we're trying to do things more proactively, trying to deter the folks that would use a gun to commit a crime or other crimes not to do it. And for the ones that have done that, we're trying to provide them options that don't end up with one or two things. Either they're dead or they're in prison for a really long time.
And it was interesting to me to go, Jim, did you want to add it? Go ahead, Jim.
I do. I mean, it saves you prison costs because people don't end up in prison. It saves you emergency rooms. It also makes your community more attractive when businesses want to expand or businesses want to come. It's actually, if you take the long view of this, it actually saves not just lives, but it also saves money for a community.
Jim, I know you said this is obviously it sounds like a all of those things are very logical. They make a lot of sense. It's backed up by evidence on a national level that this is effective. We heard Mayor Artis talk about a criminologist, David Kennedy, who directs the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. I wonder, Jim, though, what you think, why do you think this is such an effective program?
Well, it's by far the best program that's out there across the country. It's been used all the way from California to Massachusetts with good results. The city of Peoria has connected itself to the National Network of Safe Communities, which is centered at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, which is where David Kennedy is. It just makes sense absolutely everywhere. It makes sense in a Chicago, which is so terribly troubled by it. And Chicago's got some efforts going, but they need to have a whole lot more efforts. We need it all across central Illinois. We need it in East St. Louis. We've tried to make steps to get it started in other places. Like you say, Champaign-Urbana is in the early steps of doing this. And doing it well. Springfield is in the early steps of doing this. It is the best available and most logical and most evidence-based approach to reducing gun violence and thereby bringing the police and the community together, which is something we terribly need these days, and actually solving and reducing one of our worst problems. I can answer more specifically.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. Mayor Artis, I just want to ask you one last question because we know that this is a program that you all have instituted. Jim was saying, Peoria has taken a leadership role in instituting this across central Illinois. In a minute, we're going to talk about, speak with one gentleman who is involved with the program in Champaign-Urbana. But I know that it also can be complicated when you're instituting programs like this. There's been, you know, like there was a report that the city helped one man who got involved with the program get an apartment, only to have him run an underage prostitution operation out of that. When you think about your goals for this whole program, I wonder for you, how do you measure success for Don't Shoot Peoria, Mayor Artis?
Well, it's a good question, Nyla, and it's one that, you know, you can really get bogged down in a lot of these statistics. You know, I think the biggest example I can give is if people look at the number of homicides in a community, they try to gauge whether your community is safe or not by the number of people that were killed, and it just doesn't work, and it's not accurate just because there's people that can explain the details of it a lot better, but we're trying to measure the amount of people that are not using guns and committing crimes anymore. We're trying to identify these 220 or 30 men who go through the program. How many of those, number one, take us up on the request and saying, let us help you. Put down your guns and let us help you. And then we can measure where they go, what they do, and how those success rates are. We know that this is one of the largest uphill battles that you could ever try to take on, just because that whole lifestyle is just, it's so conducive to continuing that lifestyle, and it's hard for them to get out. But we're seeing success, and it's coming slowly. We know it would, but we're gaining momentum. The thing that we really have in Peoria now is we have all these elements that I mentioned at the top of the show with the law enforcement community and the prosecutors and everyone else. We're really starting to engage the overall community as a whole. We call that PCAV, Peoria Community Against Violence, and it's a growing group of people, and every day we're getting more people to participate and more people to help reach out to these young men and help them change their ways. So, you know, you're always going to have an instance, like you mentioned, of the person that went out and committed another crime, but you know, I could sit here and be happy, and was happy to listen to Mr. Spencer's comments, and I don't take them lightly. That is not an easy situation to turn your back on, into change. But we're seeing more and more of those testaments all the time.
That's Peoria's Mayor Jim Artis. Mayor Artis, thanks for taking the time to join us. I know you've got to run, but I appreciate you sharing with us about the Don't Shoot Peoria program. Thanks, Mayor.
Thanks, Nala.
As we were talking about, this is a program that's also just now also launching in Champaign. And I want to go now to a gentleman who's working with that program. Dante Lotz is with CU Fresh Start. He's a community liaison with the Prairie Center in Urbana. Dante, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dante, can you describe your role with the program?
My role is to provide intense case management. My title is Community Service Liaison. And so what happens is after the call-in takes place, we have a post-meeting and gather the individuals in the room, talk to them a little bit more about the program and how we can be of support possibly to them. At that point, they decide if they want to engage in my services or not. And if they do, they complete the initial paperwork. We eventually do an adult needs and strength assessment so I can see where they're at in life and some of the history with the participants. And from that point, we move into creating a case management plan. The needs that come out of the assessment drives the plan, and the individual has a lot of say-so in like what two or three things that we want to start with that could possibly prevent them or deter them from, you know, the violence or, you know, carrying the guns and things of that nature.
Right. So you're the person who, it's kind of interesting to hear your perspective now. You're sort of the other side of what we were hearing from Tirico. You're one of the folks who would have been helping someone like Tirico, except obviously you're doing this in Champaign instead of Peoria. So you said that case management plan that you put together, that's something where, for in Tirico's case, you know, he worked a lot on, he said soft skills were really important to him in terms of job readiness and things like that. I wonder, what are sort of the top two or three things that people say they need help with when you're putting together these programs?
Well, the assessment, we have I have also another form that provide the night of the call-in just to see what they might feel or some of the things without doing the actual assessment itself. And some of the top things that come up is, of course, employment. We have some education, housing. And also we offer probation and parole compliance support as well. So that's a lot of what you see initially. Oftentimes it'll dabble into some other areas, or later on once the individuals are have become a little more comfortable with the initiative and myself, then you start hearing about some of the traumas and some of the mental health issues that are present that they know are there.
And yeah, so Dante, I'm going to...
Right there.
Let me stop you just for a second there because we've got to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll continue this conversation. I want to hear a little bit more about that. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. We're talking about how different communities across Illinois are working to stop gun violence. Earlier, we were talking about Peoria being the first city in central Illinois to adopt an anti-violence strategy based on a national evidence-based model. It's called Don't Shoot Peoria. A few years later, in the fall of 2016, Champaign-Urbana launched a similar program called CU Fresh Start. Dante Lotz is on the line with us. He's the group's community liaison with the Prairie Center in Urbana. Dante, you were just talking before the break about how oftentimes there's a mental health component to this. As you start to meet, particularly these young men, they start to share with you. I wonder if you could elaborate on that in terms of what support you all provide them for that.
Yes. Well, the particular group that I'm currently working with, a lot of them had traumas going back all the way to 2009, where you had a shooting incident involving a young man named Kewan Carrington in law enforcement. Those individuals, as I get reconnected with them, they're still speaking about that situation and how it impacts them. And so that is one of the components that we provide support. And it's very fortunate because here in our community, when you're talking about mental health support and services, that's like a 3-month waiting period. There's a long waiting list. However, I am personally appreciative of our Champaign County probation. They have arranged for an individual to come to the probation office and provide mental health appointments, where there's not so much of the wait. It might be a month or less, depending on the schedule. And that's something to me is very huge in regards to allowing these young men and maybe sometime a young lady in the future to talk about what's going on with them and to be open and honest with someone and that individual helping them navigate through the services and expediting what's already here in the community. So that to me is a huge component and some of the buy-in that some of our local agencies have provided. And it's not just to CU Fresh Start, but just in general, their agency has took an initiative to do that along with some other services that they're trying to waive fees for. The more important thing is for the participants to benefit from the services.
Dante, I know so far we've heard about these call-ins, and I know CU Fresh Start has had 2. You're working with about 10 people right now. You mentioned mental health. What do you think some of the greatest challenges have been as you have gotten into this program for the folks that you're working with?
Some of the greatest challenges is, of course, getting past some of the obstacles that they have in place through their experience. So when you come into a room, regardless if I had, because many of the participants I worked with early on, whether it be alternative school, Boys and Girls Club, things of that nature, volunteer basketball coach, but when I'm being reintroduced to them as, you know, a community service liaison and they see me connected to law enforcement, they see me connected to other individuals in the community, it's like they have to reevaluate their relationship. They have to reevaluate myself. And so there is a natural, forgot the term I used for, but there is that contemplative stage, that's what it is, that occur
Well, they have to figure out whether or not they trust you, right? Because I think that's...
Absolutely.
What struck me with Tirico when he was sharing his story was the fact that when he went to the call-in, first of all, he didn't even know what he could trust what he was walking into. But the other thing that really struck me about the conversation is he said he would have preferred to do everything on his own, and he's had to sort of learn that that isn't necessarily... He's had to learn to offer to... accept help from people, which is hard for everybody to do, mm-hmm. I imagine, you know?
And so one thing that after observing Peoria and getting a lot of healthy information from them, one thing that I took it upon myself to do was to meet with the individuals, whether it be via probation or parole, so they can have an understanding of what they're walking into. Didn't want them to be, blindsided or, again, you have a lot of law enforcement, you have a lot of community people in the room. So one of the things that I've done with both of the call-ins is went and met with the individuals either as a group or on one-on-one with the parole or probation officers present, because it's helping educate the probation and parole officers as well as far as what to expect. And so I think that's been very helpful for them. It's still not going to eliminate everything as far as them actually walking in that room and hearing that stern message. But it is, I think it helps build the trust right off the back as far as me being transparent with the individuals.
And for you, this is your community. I imagine there are people that you're working with who've you known for years. I wonder for you if you can explain to folks who aren't as tied into the communities, you, how important you think this is for programs like this are for Central Illinois?
I believe that this initiative is extremely important in any initiative like this in any city or town, because oftentimes individuals feel like, well, why should I be engaged in this? I'm living out in the suburban areas or the rural areas, but regardless of that, it impacts all of us, because you never know when there might be a violent or a shooting or murder happening, in public. You might be at a restaurant eating with your family. Your kid might be minding their own business. All of a sudden, an incident occur, and we know when these shootings happen that these bullets just travel. And so to me, it's important that we continue to support initiatives like this that's going to be proactive versus reactive as much as possible. Not going to be able to prevent everything, but for some young men, when they see that individuals are being supportive and helpful, it helps break down those barriers and that hardened individual to receive some of the services, to at least give it a chance. And that's what I tell a lot of them. You can, if nothing else, think about it, but give it a chance. If you don't like it, then that's something different. But at least, give it an opportunity. And like you said, a lot of individuals don't want the help, or they feel like they can't trust the help. And so it's a constant relationship building that occurs.
One of the men building those relationships is Dante Lotz. He's the community liaison with the Prairie Center in Urbana with CU Fresh Start. I want to thank as well former U.S. Attorney for the 46th County Central District of Illinois, Jim Lewis, someone who was instrumental in getting not just the CU Fresh Start program, but the Don't Shoot Peoria program. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're on day 726 without a state budget. Will there ever be an agreement between our Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic Speaker of the House Michael Madigan? Yesterday, top leaders of the Senate and the House met for the first time in months. And afterwards, Speaker Madigan offered a few things he wants from the governor, and he said this.
This is a governmental negotiation. This is a situation where nobody gets 100%. I asked the Republican leaders, please go down to the governor and explain. In a governmental negotiation, nobody gets 100%. Please do that.
Does the fact that Speaker Madigan is actually naming what he wants from the governor mean progress? And what does he want? Well, we have two Illinois political reporters here to help answer that from Peoria. Chris Kjærgaard is a political reporter with the Peoria Journal-Star. In studio with me here at Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism in downtown Chicago is Mike Fouché. He's publisher of the Daily Line newsletter, which just expanded to Springfield. Chris, Mike, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, sorry, a correction. Is it day 725 without a budget?
At this point, who's counting, right?
Yes. Who's okay.
At this point, it's just pain.
You know, yesterday, House Speaker Mike Madigan named three things he wants from the Rauner administration in exchange for freeze on property taxes. Chris, can you tell us what those three things are and why he's bringing them up now?
Sure. First thing is that he wants the governor to commit to signing Senate Bill 1, which is the Democrats' version of the massive education funding reform package. It came through a lot of bipartisan work and negotiation, bipartisan commission, but there ended up being a split at the end between this proposal and a different Republican one, which they're traveling the state and promoting as a compromise measure. The distinction between the two is obviously some money going to Chicago schools, which Republicans have been calling a bailout for Chicago schools. The speaker wants that off the table. That's also the legislation that the governor's education secretary had said contained about 90% of what he wanted in it. And that reference there goes to what the speaker had to say yesterday about in a governmental negotiation, nobody gets 100% of what they want. Democrats have been seizing on that 90% mention and trying to beat the governor up about getting most of what one wants rather than having to have everything that one wants in legislation. The speaker also put onto the table a requirement. He wants the governor to commit to agreeing to regulating the rates that insurance companies can charge for workers' compensation insurance. The Democrats and the speaker believe that after the workers' comp reforms from several years ago, insurance companies have not been adequately passing along the savings on that money. And then he also wants to slow down the proposed Medicaid changes that the Rauner administration is pushing for. And this has been a central and I think little covered issue around the state in moving to a new system on Medicaid, a public-private system there.
I want to talk about healthcare in a second. Mike, let me ask you, the fact that we have these three things on the table now, that Speaker Madigan is, it seems like there's actually like something else on the table now, right?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, Madigan has a long record of holding his cards close to his vest, right? And so the moment that he actually starts saying something that is a little different from everything else, then it gets interesting. I mean, he does a really great job of making everybody guess what is Madigan going to do. And so he comes up
with the fact that we actually
have
something yesterday means, do you actually see this as movement?
Yeah, definitely. But I think, though, that there's a lot of talk about whether or not there's movement. And the truth is that this is really the kind of thing you got to imagine. Negotiations in a legislature are like looking at the surface of an ocean. There's a lot that's going on underneath that you can't necessarily see. You know, this last week, I visited Springfield. I spent a lot of time on the phone talking to legislators. And what everyone tells me is that, yes, there is an enormous amount of pressure that's being put on the leaders by the rank and file members. And there are negotiations going on smaller detail kind of things that aren't top line kind of numbers that are really about building trust between the two different sides of the aisle and between the House and the Senate.
And are we seeing, so you think that that's actually happening? And do you think there's a lot of pressure from the lower rank and file on the leaders to make this happen?
Well, they could all be lying to me, but and that sort of thing happens. But yeah, I think that is happening.
And I mean, Chris, I wonder if you can remind us what happens if Friday comes and there's no agreement. Do you see this as sort of a crucial week?
This is a crucial week, although we begin to get deeper into more of the crucial problems if there's not a solution by this week and it drags on. At the end of this week, if there is no deal, I think we can reasonably expect most of the credit agencies have telegraphed that they foresee a further downgrade to the Illinois credit rating, which would bring us into junk bond status But beyond that, as the weeks tick on, you're going to see not only what the comptroller warned legislative leaders and the governor's office and anybody who would listen about at the tail end of the week, which is going into July, running into the point of not being able to make all of the mandated payments that she has been expected to make.
And
stop spinning on making those payments. But we also have an increasing number of school districts that are beginning to warn of the consequences of not having money, and many of them are funded half or more from the state in terms of education funding and how far they can go into the school year. We have
right, and so those are sort of all of those. Yeah, Chris, those are the huge consequences of that. School funding, state worker pay. We've got a lot going on this week with that Medicaid ruling as well. That's Chris Kjærgaard, a political reporter with the Peoria Journal-Star. Mike Fouché, publisher of The Daily Line. You guys are just launching in Springfield now, too.
That's right, The Daily Line Springfield. Our new editor is starting next week, Ray Hodge, and she will be putting together our first edition for July 17th, Monday, July 17th. We're very excited. We're going to continue doing what we've been doing in Chicago, which is the detail and tiny little bits that are going on in the legislature.
That's Mike Fouché. Thanks to both of you for doing that. By the way, we had breaking news this morning about the travel ban. We're going to be talking about that on tomorrow's program. If you want to leave us a voicemail on how you feel about it, 217-300-2121. Thanks for listening to The 21st.